Hello, this is the operator speaking. All the recordings has been started now. This conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now I'll turn the meeting over to back to Ms. Gisela Gruber-White.
Thank you very much, Andre. Over to you, David.
Thank you very much, Gisela and Andre. Again, my name is David Olive, Vice President for Policy Development Support at ICANN. We're pleased to have you join us today. This is our regular policy update webinar, which we do prior to an ICANN meeting in order to provide interested parties with an update on policy development activities. We think it helps to prepare all of us for the meetings coming up in Toronto. There is a lot of information contained in this presentation. The slides, the recording, and the transcripts will be made available following this session so that everyone has an opportunity to review this information when you'd wish. A translation of the transcript will be made in Spanish and French and will be available shortly. A few housekeeping matters, if I could. To reduce interference, please mute your phones. There'll be an opportunity to ask questions at the end of the session. If indeed you have some questions during the session, please put them into the chat box, and we'll make every effort to answer them during the presentations. The goals of our session today are to let you know about policy work that we're doing at the moment, to highlight the issues that will be discussed in Toronto, to inform you of some other activities and opportunities at the Toronto meeting, and also to answer any questions you may have about these issues or the process we're discussing. The ICANN meeting in Toronto has many active groups who will be in session. The various supporting organizations and advisory committees will be meeting, and other working group meetings will be there. Some of the highlights we have here on the slide: the newcomers track for those recently involved with ICANN, updates on the registrar agreement amendments, implementation of the new GTLD program, the top-level domain program, and some milestones with our at-large group, the regional organizations, their five-year anniversary celebrations. More information can be found on the Toronto website, toronto45.icann.org, for your information. Policy recommendations are formed and refined by the ICANN community through the supporting organizations and inputs by the advisory committees. Here we have them shown. You know some of them: the generic name supporting organization, the country code name supporting organization, and the address supporting organization. And inputs and other advice also come from advisory committees, such as the At-Large Advisory Committee, the Security Stability Advisory Committee, the Root Server Systems Advisory Committee, and, of course, the Government Advisory Committee. Topics covered in this session today will have a focus from many of our staff members who are dealing with the generic name supporting organization. Maria Konings will talk to us about current and possible policy development processes within that group. Margie Varlam will give us an update on the registrar accreditation agreement. Barbara Roseman, Barry Cobb, and Steve Shang will talk to us about the who is. Barry Cobb will also provide us some information on the current activities for consumer choice, competition, and trust. And Brian Peck will inform us about the ongoing activities for the protection of IOC, Red Cross, and international intergovernmental organization names. We'll turn then to Bart Boswinkel to inform us about activities in the country code supporting organization. Heidi Ulrich will talk to us about the activities planned for Toronto with the at-large group. And Barbara Roseman will inform us about the activities of the address supporting organization and some of their briefings scheduled in Toronto. With that, I hope to have an informative and interactive session with you and with the staff from the policy team. I now turn it over to Margie Milam, Senior Policy Counselor, to take us through some of the GNSO policy issues. Margie, please.
Thank you, David, and hello, everyone. I wanted to provide you with a brief overview of some of the activities that are going on within the GNSO. As David mentioned, we will have specific briefings from Marika and others on some of these issues, but as you can see on this slide, there are a tremendous number of issues being dealt with in the GNSO. There's currently over 20 projects underway, and some of these are in the very commencement stage, very early stage. So I invite you to consider participating in some of these sessions or groups if this list of topics indicates some areas where you might have interest. Some of these are merely being kicked off as we speak with requests for issue reports or PDPs, policy development processes that have just gotten underway. And so as you listen to the presentation today, we suggest that you consider participating in these efforts because we're always looking for new volunteers and new people to bring fresh ideas to the work of the GNSO. And as you may know, in the GNSO, at the Toronto meeting, there will be a change of leadership. The GNSO Council is currently in its election stage, where it's now selecting a new chair and vice chairs. And this transition of leadership from Stefan Van Gelder to the new leader will take place in Toronto. So this is exciting times for the Toronto meeting and for the GNSO Council. And we invite you to participate in the GNSO meeting on Wednesday in Toronto if you'd like to see some of the other activities going on at the council level. And with that, I'll hand it over to Marika Konings, and she'll actually walk you through some of the issues that are currently being discussed in Toronto. Marika?
Thanks, Margie. So my name is Marika Konings. I'm a senior policy director and mainly responsible for dealing with policy development activities in the GNSO. So first of all, I will be talking to you about the inter-registrar transfer policy, which is also known as IRTP. The IRTP itself is a GNSO consensus policy that was adopted back in 2004 and has as its objective to provide registrants with a transparent and predictable way to transfer domain name registrations between registrars. As part of the implementation of that policy, it was decided to carry out a review to determine whether it was actually working as intended or whether there were any areas that would benefit from further clarification or improvement. It might be worth pointing out in that context that this is actually the number one area of consumer complaints when it comes to issues that are raised with our ICANN compliance staff. So as a result of that review, a number of issues were then identified that were then grouped together in five different policy development processes, or also known as PDPs, which were titled A to E, and they're currently being addressed in a consecutive manner. So the third in this series is the IRTP Part C working group. So this working group is looking at three issues. First of all, they're looking at whether there should be a change of control or a change of registrant function for GTLD registrations, as this currently does not exist. Secondly, they're looking at whether the form of authorization, which is used to initiate a transfer, should be time limited. Currently, there's no time limit associated with that form. And thirdly, they've been looking at whether there should be a requirement for registries to use IANA IDs for registrars instead of proprietary IDs. So the working group published its initial report prior to the last ICANN meeting in Prague in conjunction with the opening of a public comment forum as well as a workshop in order to obtain community input on the report and the preliminary recommendations that were put forward in that report. And in between Prague and now, the working group has been working very hard on reviewing the comments that were received, as well as continuing its deliberations on some of the open items that were identified. So the working group is now very close to finalizing its report and hopes to do that next week so it can be submitted in time for the council to consider it at its meeting in Toronto. So I just wanted to give you a short preview of the recommendations that are expected to be made in relation to the three charter questions. As said, you know, for the final version of those, you'll need to look at the report next week, but this is as it currently stands. So first of all, the working group is expected to recommend the creation of a new policy which would govern a change of registrant. So the idea would be to create an overarching transfer policy under which you would have one branch that relates to a change of registrar, while the other branch would prescribe the rules for a change of registrant. And some of the basic rules that will be included as part of that new policy would be that, you know, both parties, the previous and new registrant, would need to agree to the changes, and that a change of registrar and a change of registrant cannot be conducted at the same time to avoid complications. More details on, you know, the different steps of that proposed policy can be found in the report. A second recommendation relates to time-limiting forms of authorization. The working group is recommending that an FOA should not be valid for more than 60 days. Following that, it would expire and a new FOA would need to be requested in order to initiate a transfer. A third recommendation proposes to require all GTLD operators to publish the Registrar of Records, IANA ID, in the TLD's WHOIS, at the same time noting that this should not prevent a registry to use a proprietary ID in the context of its other operations, as long as the IANA ID is also published. So, and as said, the IRGP Part C Working Group hopes to finalize its report next Tuesday and submit it to the GNSO Council for its consideration. And in addition, they've also planned a meeting in Toronto to brief the community on the final report and its recommendations, which is scheduled for Wednesday from 8:30 to 10 local time. So once this report has been submitted, it will be then up to the GNSO Council to consider those recommendations for adoption, and assuming that they will be adopted, then they will move on to the board, and from there we'll move into implementation, and then it probably will be time to start looking at the next IRTP PDP in line, which will be Part D. So this is a story to be continued. So you can find some background information, a link to the initial report, as well as the current transfer policy as it stands. So next up is a PDP relating to the locking of a domain name subject to UDRP proceedings, or also known as a UDRP Domain Name Lock Working Group. So following the issue report on the current state of the UDRP, the GNSO Council decided to initiate a PDP on this specific item only, as a more extensive review of the UDRP is scheduled for a later point in time. So currently, there is no requirement to lock a domain name in the period between the filing of the UDRP complaint and the commencement of proceedings. The UDRP itself only refers to maintaining status quo, but it actually does not define what this means or at what point in time the status quo should be maintained or can be lifted. So this has resulted in different interpretations and practices by registrars, and that has in its turn resulted again in confusion and lack of clarity for registrars, UDRP providers, as well as complainants and registrants. So as a result of that, you know, the working group has been tasked to look at a number of questions, such as, you know, whether there should be an outline of the process for the locking of a domain name, which should be followed by the registrar. Should there be a definition of what locked actually means and what changes are prevented as a result of the lock? And also looking at, you know, should there be any additional safeguards to protect registrants? So one of the first tasks of this working group approach charter was to obtain further input in order to have a clear understanding of the exact nature and scope of issues encountered with the locking of a domain name subject to UDRP proceedings. And to this end, the working group started off by conducting two surveys, one for registrars and one for UDRP providers, in which a range of questions were asked to get further insight into the current practices in relation to the locking of a domain name subject to UDRP proceedings, but also get their input on the issues they encounter with this. So in addition to that, the working group also opened a public comment forum and reached out to the different GNSO stakeholder groups and constituencies, as well as ICANN supporting organizations and advisory committees to get their input and their views on these issues. So the working group now has basically started to review all the information received and hopes to use that in starting to develop responses to each of the charter questions in the next couple of months. The working group has set itself as a target to publish an initial report for public comment towards the end of this year. So that will be another opportunity to provide input on these issues and the recommendations the working group hopefully will be able to put forward on this topic. So if you're interested to hear more about this topic and participate in discussions, the working group is organizing an open working group meeting in Toronto, which has been scheduled for Thursday, the 18th of October, from 9 to 10:30 local time. And the working group is planning to make this a really interactive session, so please come and share your views with the working group so they can take those into account when as they continue their work on this topic. So next topic concerns another policy development process that has recently kicked off in the GNSO and relates to THIC WHIS. So WHIS requirements are specified in the registry and registrar agreements that ICANN has, and there are currently two models that are being used by GTLD registries to meet these requirements. The one is known as the THIN WHIS model. In this model, it's the registry only collects the information associated with the name, such as the data sufficient to identify the sponsoring registrar, the status of the registration, creation and expiration dates for each registration, name server data, the last time the record was updated in the registry database, as well as the URL for the registrar's WHIS service. In this model, registrars maintain the data associated with the registrant of the domain name, and they provide it in turn via their own WHIS services. So currently, .jobs, .com, and .net are the GTLDs that are operating under this thin model. So the other model is known as the THIC WHIS model. In this model, the THIC registry, the registry collects both sets of data. So the domain, the data associated with the domain name, as well as the data associated with the registrant from the registrar, and in turn publishes the data via the registry WHIS. So from discussions in other working groups, such as the IRTP working group, it became obvious that from a transfer perspective, a THIC WHIS would have a lot of advantages, as the identity of the registrar would be known by both the registry as well as the registrar. But there was at the same time a realization that there may also be other factors that would need to be considered in order to determine whether a THIC WHIS should be required for all GTLDs. So in order to explore this issue in further depth, the GNSO Council initiated a PDP on this topic earlier this year. And the status of that is that a drafting team is currently working on putting the final touches on the charter for the PDP working group, which it hopes to submit to the GNSO Council for adoption in Toronto. So once the charter has been adopted, a working group will be formed and is then expected to make recommendations to the GNSO Council on this issue. So if this is a topic that you're interested in participating in and, working towards developing recommendations, please keep an eye on the GNSO Council website where the call for volunteers will get published in addition to pushing it out through the different mailing lists and other publications that we have. And here you have a link to the initial report and as well the workspace where you can see the latest draft of the charter as it is. And then last but not least for me is uniformity of contracts to address registration abuse. So this issue actually dates back to the Registration Abuse Working Group, which was tasked by the GNSO Council to identify which issues relating to registration abuse would be suitable for policy development. And as part of its task, the working group identified a number of types of registration abuses, as well as looking at the current policies and provisions that registries and registrars have in place to deal with abuse. So in order to examine in further detail whether some kind of uniform provision would assist registries and registrars to address registration abuse, the Registration Abuse Policies Working Group recommended to the GNSO Council that it should evaluate whether a minimum baseline should be created for all in-scope ICANN agreements, and if created, evaluate how such language should be structured to address the most common forms of registration abuse. So as a next step in this process and following on from this recommendation, the GNSO Council requested an issue report on this topic. And following the preliminary issue report, which was published for public comment, ICANN staff has now published the final issue report for GNSO Council consideration. The issue report itself looks at the history of the issue, it reviews existing abuse provisions in registry and registrar agreements. It determines that the issue is considered in scope, meaning within ICANN's remit and the GNSO Council to deal with. And as a result of all that research, it recommends that the GNSO Council consider initiating a PDP on this topic. The issue report also does identify that there is a need for additional research to determine how effective current approaches and policies that are already in place by the different registries and registrars are, and what effect or impact uniform provisions may have, you know, both positive as well as negative, which should help inform the working group deliberations, you know, should the GNSO Council decide to proceed with a PDP. Might be worth pointing out as well that in response to the public comment forum, an alternative way of dealing with this issue was also put forward, in which it was suggested that ICANN staff should take a lead in this effort and draft proposed provisions to address registration abuse for community review. So the next step in this effort will be for the GNSO Council to review the report and its recommendation and decide whether or not to move forward with a PDP on this topic. The Council is expected to have a discussion on this topic in Toronto, so you know, if you're interested in hearing more about this, you know, please look at the GNSO Council schedule and check when they're debating this. And I think that takes it to the end of the topics I'm covering for today's webinar. If you have any questions about these topics, you know, please feel free to write them in the chat in the Adobe Connect, and I'll do my best to answer them, or you can save them to the end of our presentation when we'll have an opportunity for questions and answers. And with that, I'll hand it over to Margie.
Thank you, Marika. I wanted to provide you with an update on what's going on with the RAA negotiations. This is the registrar accreditation agreement that ICANN signed with all registrars. As many of you may know, this project has been underway for about a year since the Dakar meeting, where the ICANN board had asked for two things to happen: bilateral negotiations to commence on the topic of looking at issues that have been recommended by the law enforcement community and the GNSO and ALAC joint drafting team report. Those negotiations are currently underway. They've been underway for the last year. We published a community wiki that provides the latest updates. And we've taken a lot of time in trying to get information from the law enforcement community and the GAC to really try to understand and bridge the differences on some of the key issues that were discussed in Prague. We've also tried to kick off an analysis of how to develop a privacy and proxy accreditation program, as this is one of the requests that has been submitted, and there'll be activity in Toronto, if you're interested in this issue, to explore how to go ahead and develop an accreditation program for privacy and proxy providers. On a separate front, there was an issue report request where the board asked the GNSO Council to have an issue report published so that if all the issues in negotiation were not adequately addressed, they could be addressed through the policy development processes once the negotiations conclude. And that's currently on hold until the negotiations conclude in order that the issues can be identified so these PDPs, this policy development process, could begin. Just prior to Toronto, ICANN published a series of documents to provide a much more in-depth analysis of what's going on in the negotiations. If you look at the documents, you'll see a summary chart of how the law enforcement recommendations have been addressed and other key recommendations. I just want to alert you that there has not been a new RAA drafted or specifications posted, because what has been done is a focus on the very specific issues of who is validation and data retention. And if you'd like to see a more fulsome discussion of what the RAA could look like, I invite you to look at the documents that were published prior to Prague, where you'll see a proposed draft RAA, and you'll also see registrar-generated documents that really flesh out how some of these recommendations could be adopted in the form RAA. As I mentioned, since Prague, we've really tried to focus the negotiations on the big issues to try to get agreement on how to proceed. These issues include the who is verification issue. And currently, if you look through the documents published prior to Toronto, you'll see that the big difference in the various positions relates to what data points are to be verified, whether it would be email and phone number, which is currently the law enforcement request and the staff position, or the email or phone, which is the registrar position. And also another issue that's still open is the timing of verification, whether or not this verification is to occur before resolution of the domain name or after that. And also there's been discussions related to when you need to re-verify some of this information. With respect to data retention, there's been discussions about the period of time for which information should be retained, 6 months versus 2 years, depending upon the sensitivity of the information. And there's also been further discussions on the types of data to be maintained. And finally, the big issue that we've addressed and tried to really hone in on is what to do in the event that there's a discrepancy with local laws. As many of you may know, there is currently an exception process for local laws where if there's a violation of a who is obligation under the RAA, it triggers this policy that allows the registrar to try to seek an exemption. And we're now looking with consultations with the GAC to see how to expand that to address the who is issues that may come out of this negotiation, as well as data retention issues. And I'm not going to go through these points in detail, but just to show you that there's been tremendous progress in some of the issues requested by the community and the law enforcement representatives, and these were reflected in the draft published prior to Prague. There are also continued discussions with respect to issues that ICANN has asked for additional obligations related to, for example, SLA for who is availability, related to IDN, as well as registrar asks. And some of these discussions will continue to occur after the Toronto meeting. And with that, I've provided some links to information regarding the status of the negotiations. The first link really will provide you with charts and information as to how these negotiations have occurred since Prague. There's also the negotiations wiki where you can see meeting reports for all of the meetings that occurred since Prague, as well as the GNSO final issue report. And as I mentioned earlier, we will have a session in Toronto on the privacy and proxy accreditation program specifically, as well as an overall update where we'll be asking for input from the community on some key issues. Those issues, if you would like to prepare for that session, are included in the RAA status announcement in the first link that I've provided above. And with that, I will pass it on to Barbara Roseman, who will provide you an update on the Who Is studies.
Hi, this is Barbara Roseman. As many of you know, the Who Is studies got broken down into four different areas: the misuse of public data, the registrant identification issues, proxy and privacy abuse, which is looking at how proxy and privacy registrations are used by different entities, and proxy and privacy relay and reveal, which was intended to follow how well relay and reveal requests worked from end to end, but got transitioned to a different study. So I'll talk about that in a bit more detail in a moment. There was a Who Is Service Requirements Report, and there's a survey that's ongoing that's related to that. And then there are some other Who Is activities that we want to point out. The goals of the GTLD Who Is studies were basically, they've been debated for many years. And in October of 2007, the GNSO Council decided that getting some factual data was going to assist greatly in developing who is policy, so that we weren't relying entirely on anecdotes, but actually had some consistent data that we could refer to. The updates right now are that Study 3, the Who is Privacy and Proxy Services Abuse Study, is being conducted by NPL, and they're not going to have results until later in this year. It's relevant to the Who is RP, the privacy and proxy accreditation discussions, and validation of Who is data. And Study 4 has been concluded in its revised form. So it was originally envisioned as an in-depth study into communication of relay and identity reveal requests. It has transitioned to determine the feasibility of conducting the full study. Initially, they found that there were difficulties in achieving what the full study asked for, and so they decided to look at what other issues might be involved. That study, the feasibility study, has been completed and posted. There was a webinar held in August, which is available online. And the results indicate that a full study would be worthwhile, however, with some limitations. And the next action step here is having a GNSO discussion and determination on how to move forward. So, Steve, I will pass off to you for the Who is Review Team final report.
Thank you, Barbara. I'm going to provide a quick update of the ESSEC comment on the Who is Review Team final report. The background for this work is the ICANN board asked each supporting organization and advisory committees to submit comments on the Who is Review Team final report as part of the community input for implementation of this report. And in response, ESSEC submitted SAC 55 to this request. The Who is Review Team final report have 16 recommendations. What the ESSEC did is it went through every one of those recommendations and provide some implementation advice and also prioritize those recommendations. But the ESSEC also made a key finding, that is the cornerstone problem facing all Who is discussions is understanding or asserting the purpose of domain name registration data and the service and the WHOIS server itself. So the ESSEC, invites the community to consider a set of questions. Why are the data collected? What purpose will the data serve? Who collects the data? Where the data is stored? Where the data is escrowed? Who needs the data and why, and who needs access to logs of access to the data and why. So the ESSEC felt that a community discussion and agreement is a first step to improve who is. So therefore, the ESSEC recommends the board to clearly state that the development of a registration data policy is a priority, and also directs the CEO to create a registration data policy committee to work on this issue. For more information of the ESSEC comment, for each of the Who is Review Team recommendations and this overarching ESSEC comment, you can find the ESSEC report on this link. With that, I'll pass to my colleague Barry to talk about Who is Service Requirement Report survey.
Great. Thank you, Steve. Hello, all. So last but certainly not least of the realm of Who is a working group function to put together a survey around some of the technical requirements of Who is. In 2009, the GNSO Council asked ICANN staff to construct a report based on some technical requirements and known deficiencies, as well as some possible other technical requirements that may support other policy initiatives. The working group has been established in 2011 after the final report was released in July of 2010. And basically, the working group was to help construct a survey around these technical requirements to gauge community agreement and move forward from there. So why is the survey important? First, as I mentioned, it will help provide the voice to the community to understand some of the technical features that are possible, as well as gauge community agreement among these possible requirements. I think more importantly, what the analysis and end report will provide for the community is may it assist other elements that are going on or that are occurring out in the community, such as the IETF and the WIRDS protocol efforts and the like. But basically, the survey is only a technical inventory, and it doesn't define or suggest any policies or policy attributes that deal with who is. So recent developments. The working group had submitted a draft version of the survey, opened up a public comment period, and several community members participated in the draft survey, and we received lots of great feedback, which was very important. Since then, we incorporated all of the comments into the latest survey. We finalized the survey, migrated it to an ICANN web environment, and then the working group released the survey to the community on the 13th of September, 2012. Basically, the survey is quite lengthy. There are 15 sections around 11 technical requirements. And some of the features to the survey is that given the length and some of the complexity and some of the technical details within the survey, we have included a resume later functionality that will allow survey takers to create a login ID for the survey, save their entries, and return later to complete the survey, and which is proven to be very, very necessary requirement for this type. This slide I won't go through in detail, but basically is just a listing of these 11 various technical requirements. And I suggest that community members read through what each one of these sections are talking about, as well as the survey announcement also includes a link to a PDF copy of the survey so that community members may review the entire survey before having to log in to create the survey itself. So what are the next steps? Basically, the survey will be available till the 31st of October. After which the survey will be shut down. The working group will reconvene, will analyze the results, and then we'll also publish the final report. We're targeting December of 2012, as to which we'll submit that back to the GNSO Council. And lastly, there are two main areas of to gain more information. The first link is to the announcement for the survey availability. I suggest you go in there, and there will be complete details with how to take the survey, where to access it, and some other tips and hints that will be helpful for taking the survey. I do ask that you spread the word across the community. We're trying to increase as much participation as possible, so please invite some of your colleagues as well to take the survey too, please. And lastly, the last link is just the working group activity page where you can see the chronological history of how we've come this far. So with that, I'm going to change gears. That was the last topic with respect to who is within the GNSO. And we'll move over into a new topic called consumer metrics. And basically, this is a working group that was formed based off of the advice off the resolution from the ICANN board requesting advice from the SOs and ACs to establish definitions, measures, and three-year targets for those measures for some key terms that are used in the affirmation of commitments: competition, consumer trust, and consumer choice, not only in the context of the domain name system, but there'll be key terms that are used to evaluate the effectiveness of the new GTLD program. And if the definitions and measures that are included within this particular realm, they'll be used to gauge the effectiveness of the GTLD program 1 year post the first delegation. So what are some of the recent developments for the Consumer Metrics Working Group? They submitted the final version of their advice letter to the GNSO Council on the 17th of August. Prior to that, there was a public comment forum that was opened, as to which the working group received all of the comments and reviewed how they affected the draft report, and later submitted the final advice to the GNSO Council for their deliberation. The Council did review these on the 13th of September, and they'll also be reviewing them here in Toronto, so next week in Toronto. So this slide is just a very busy slide that provides the final versions of the definitions for each of the terms to be defined. For consumer trust and consumer choice, it was very important that consumer be defined. So there's technically four definitions that the working group has created. And it should also be understood that consumer choice and competition are very tightly related. But the key differentiator is that competition only deals with the realm of the contracted parties that provide the TLD services, such as registry operators, registrars, and the like. This next slide is basically just a brief summary of the proposed metrics that the working group created for each definition. Again, I won't go into details around the proposed metrics here. At the end of this section of the presentation, there will be links out to the advice letter as well as the metrics that support the definitions. They'll also include the three-year targets. There's quite a bit of information there, and I suggest going there for more details. So next steps, members of the working group, they'll brief the GNSO Council in Toronto as well on the weekend as well as on the Wednesday session. And from there, we'll see how the Council moves from here. Lastly, further information about consumer metrics. There's an activities page on the GNSO website as well as the metrics wiki page. And again, it's very important that the community review the advice letter because there is some very intense details in it. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Brian Peck, and he'll talk to you about the protection of Red Cross and IOC names. Thank you.
Thank you, Barry, and hello, everyone. I'm going to provide a brief update on the activities related to the protection of the lanes related to the International Olympic Committee and the Red Cross movement. In September of 2011, the GAC provided formal advice to the board recommending and submitting a proposal to protect the names of both the International Red Cross and International Olympic Committee at both the top and second level of the new GTLDs. Since that time, the GNSO has been working on this issue. In addition, the new GTLD committee of the board has also been looking at this issue carefully. During the summer, the new GTLD committee determined that the board should leave these issues in the hands of ICANN's policymaking bodies, i.e. the GNSO. Last month, the new GTLD committee as well resolved that the GNSO should advise the ICANN board prior to the 31st of January of next year about any possible global public interest or security and stability concerns with regards to second-level protections for the IOC and RC names, given the pending designation of new GTLDs sometime next year. In conjunction with that resolution, the board stated that in the absence of any such advice, the board would be prepared to adopt the GAC recommendations for second-level protection, i.e. that permanent protection be extended to both the names of the IOC and the Red Cross at the second level of new GTLDs. Current status of the work of the GNSO Council is on two fronts. First, the GNSO requested an issue report a few months ago looking at the issues of providing special protections for international organization names, not only the Red Cross and the IOC, but all international government organizations as well, or IGOs. The final issue report was published this past Monday, and the GNSO Council is expected to take that up at its meeting in Toronto later this month. In addition, there is a drafting team that was established late last year, specifically looking at the issue of extending protections for IOC and Red Cross names at both the top and second level. The drafting team has come up with a proposal to, with regard to the protection of these names at the second level, and a public comment forum has been opened last week. The reply period closes on the 9th of November. The drafting team recommendations basically include two specific proposals. One is that an expedited PDP should be initiated as a necessary process to determine the appropriate protections for the IOC-RC names, and that in lieu of any final PDP action and or board resolution, it recommends that a temporary reservation of these names be provided for at the second level. In terms of the final issue report, staff has recommended that the GNSO Council should initiate an expedited PDP, that representatives of the IGOs, Red Cross, and International Olympic Committee should be formally invited to participate in the PDP working group process, and that also the GNSO should consider expanding any new GTLD protections for these names to existing GTLDs as well. The GNSO Council is expected, as I mentioned, to vote on the PDP and whether to initiate such a process at the Toronto meeting. Here are some additional resources if you're interested in this issue, the final issue report, and then also the public comment forum. We encourage community participation and for you to express your opinions or comments on the proposals of the drafting team to provide second-level protections for the IOC Red Cross during the public comment period. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to my colleague, Bart, who will be talking about the CCNSO activities and updates. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I hope you can hear me. I'm going to give you a high-level overview of what is happening right now in the CCNSO. I've included a couple of slides to, for those of you who are not really familiar with the CCNSO, to look at, to understand some of its working and say to compare it with the GNSO. I will just go over them very, very quickly so you can see them. So, first of all, it's majorly a platform for exchange, and it's also a policy development, as the GNSO. But it's say the scope of the policies the CCNSO can develop are very limited, and they do a lot of policy-related work. And I'll please keep this in mind in some of the next slides. So it's not just policy development, it's also policy-related work. So this is what the members do, the CCNSO members. So that's one of the two components of the CCNSO. This has been the growth, how many members we have in the growth since Prague. This shows the distribution of the membership according to the ICANN regions, and this is just a quick slide of the growth over years of the CCNSO. A little bit on the council. Again, I just showed you the roles, and you can look at it at your leisure. As to the CCNSO council, what is important, there will be there is currently an extraordinary council election in the European region. One of the councillors stepped down, and as there are two candidates who have been nominated and seconded and both accepted, there will be an election in the European region. And as to the ordinary council elections, again, five councillors need to step down. In four regions, there is only one candidate, and in the Asian-Pacific region, there are two candidates, so there will be an election there as well. The candidates of the ordinary council election will take their seats after the Beijing meeting, and the extraordinary council election, so to replace the European councillor who stepped down, as soon as that person is elected, he or she will be on the council. So now going into the CCNSO policy-related activities, I will provide you an update of the IDN CCPDP, in particular on the policy for the selection of IDN CCTLD strings, a little bit on the study group on the use of country names and territory names, STLDs, and a little bit on the framework of interpretation working group. The latter two are not directly policy related to policy development. As to the draft policy, so the IDN PDP, the working group developing the recommendations has in August, end of August, published its draft final report for public comment. And one of the major characteristics of this set of recommendations is that it builds on the fast-track methodology. So it's an, it hopes to be an improvement. The working group hopes that it will improve the fast-track process as it currently stands, which is, by the way, not a policy, but therefore the use of the work methodology. The major changes are the confusingly similarity issue is addressed. This has been a hot topic over two reviews of the IDN fast-track process and in some of the communications we had with some of the interested parties. There is a placeholder in the recommendations on the IDN variant management issues. As soon as ICANN's IDN variant issues project has been closed, the program has been closed, the working group or a future working group will revisit and to understand and see if there are some policy implications. And there is a very thoroughly revision of the processes of the fast-track process itself and an update. And what is probably very, for those of you a little bit familiar with the workings of CCTLD delegations and redelegations, this policy builds upon the current policy for delegation and redelegation of CCTLDs. So that policy for delegation, redelegation, and retirement of CCTLDs applies. This the policy proposal only focuses on the selection of the CCTLD string itself. Next steps, finalization of the draft policy. That will be included in an interim report, which will combine not just which will combine the second part of the policy development process, which is on the inclusion of IDN CCTLDs in the CCNSO. Then there will be a final report submitted for the council for adoption. And again, this is probably one of the differences. After the council has adopted it, the CCNSO members will vote upon it, and only then it will be submitted to the board for adoption. A second part, and this is more a policy-related topic, is the current status of the study group on country names. Again, in previous updates, I've alluded to the scope of activities and the scope of this study group itself. To date, the country name study group has identified some issues, but what is far more importantly is based on the typology developed by the working group. Under the MOU between UNESCO and ICANN, UNESCO has sent out a survey to 39 countries selected by UNESCO on criteria of diversity, both in language, culture, use of scripts, and geographically, and sent it out in August. And the responses are getting in slowly, and so the working group will look at the preliminary results at its meeting in Toronto, and based on these findings combined with the issues identified, it will start preparing its final report, which may include some recommendations to the CCNSO and to the broader community how to deal with the issues identified by the study group. Finally, on the policy-related activities, I would would like to draw your attention to the Framework of Interpretation Working Group. Again, the purpose and scope has been discussed, and maybe again for you, this is not about new policy, but it is the interpretation of existing policy, basically of the policy document RFC 1591, which is from 1994. A previous working group identified some issues in the way it's been interpreted over time and the changes of interpretation over time. So this working group hopes to clarify and harmonize the interpretation of this policy document. Again, this is not a CCPDP, but it is a CCNSL working group structure. It also has members from the GAC at large and the GNSO and liaisons from the GNSO on board. And one of the, probably one of the characteristics, major characteristics, is it is not just the CCNSO but also the GAC that need to support the recommendations of this working group before they will be sent and submitted to the board. The topics, you can see them for themselves. Currently, the working group is focusing on the issues around revocation and unconsented redelegations. It is very minute and tedious work. They have been discussing the issues around this topic already at the Prague meeting, and since that time, every 2 weeks, there is a conference call where slowly but progress is made. The FOI received post-Prague input from the GAC on one of its previous topics and is preparing response to the GAC. And after they send out the response, they will finalize the recommendations on the significantly interested party topic. One other major event, and again, this is from the interaction between the GAC and the CCNSO. In the past, or pre-Prague, there was a chapter-by-chapter approach, meaning that as soon as the final report was published on the one of the topics, it would be submitted to the CCNSO and to the GAC for support. But based on the experience with the first report, that has been replaced by another approach that the working group will first finish all its work on the outstanding topics and then send the full report to the GAC and the CCNSO to seek their endorsement and support. That's as much as the policy-related activities are concerned. Other activities currently high on the CCNSO agenda, that's the review of the financial contributions. At the Prague meeting, one of the tools that was used by this working group, the expense area groupings presentation, was stated that it doesn't serve the purpose for which the working group wanted it to use. So they needed to explore an alternative approach that has been done and that will be further discussed at the Toronto meeting, and this is more based on a value-based approach instead of the allocation of costs. But again, this is just an exploration, and it's not finalized, and it's not been presented yet to the CCTLD community. At the same time, the working group is working on its on models for fair and equitable contribution across the CCTLD community of the financial contributions. The Strategic and Operational Planning Working Group will meet at the Toronto meeting to prepare its input on ICANN's strategic plan draft strategic plan, and we'll share that with the CCNSO community in due course. And finally, there is a study group on the, of the council, the CCNSO council, that looks into balancing the CCNSO load, workload, and volunteers' capacity, and hopefully they'll be able to come up with some suggestions to how to maintain that balance looking at the future, because that's become problematic. Just one more quick update on one of the joint working groups the CCNSO is participating, and this is probably the broadest joint working group currently in the ICANN environment. This is the DSSA working groups, which with participation of the at-large community, the CCNSO community, GNSO, NRO, and ESSAC members. This working group has published its phase one report, and that's still open for public comment until the 21st of October. And the working group is urging the community to provide feedback on its report, whether you, in particular, if you endorse the approach described in this phase one report, or if you if you have some questions, or even if you if you disagree with the approach. But this working group has been working on this for 2 years now, and they really need your comments and your views on their work to date. A second point, what they currently undertaking is mapping the overlap and gaps in between the different organizations involved in the security of the DNS. They want to understand what the roles and responsibilities of each of these different entities are, and to understand if there are overlaps and gaps, looking at the framework the DSSA has developed. And finally, it's interacting with the ICANN Board DNS Risk Framework Committee and in order to participate in due course with in the process of the DNS framework to be developed by ICANN. So that's for the DSSA working group update. Some of the Toronto meeting highlights, and this is on the Tuesday and Wednesday CCNSO meeting and the two-day TAC working group. First of all, there is a two-day TAC working group. Normally it's 1 day, and all of you who are interested in the technical operational issues are more than welcome. These sessions are open. The tech day and will be organized together with DNS OARC, so it's on Sunday and Monday. On Wednesday morning, there is a follow-up from the WICKET panel discussion in Prague. Again, if you're interested in the WICKET discussion, you're more than welcome to participate and at that discussion. There is a DNSSEC marketing strategy session on Tuesday afternoon, in time for and to provide input into the ICANN organized meeting on Wednesday. There has been some remarkable developments there, especially with some of the CCTLDs. One of them has been able to sign more than one-fifth of its zone, so they have over 1 million domain names signed under DNSSEC, and they will explain what they will be doing or what they have done to achieve this major result. And finally, there is a panel discussion on some principles guiding CCTLD decisions. And again, this is open for everybody who is interested in, a more philosophical debate on how CCTLDs take their decision on and what drives them. So that's on Wednesday from 2 to 3:30. Just a few information slides, again, for you to look at your leisure. And now I want to hand over to my dear colleague, Heidi Olley. Thank you.
As well as outreach and capacity building sessions taking place in Toronto. These highlights have been identified by the AILAC Executive Committee for this webinar. So to begin with the highlights of policy issues that will be discussed within the AILAC, the AILAC produced 37 statements in response to open public comments between January and mid-September this year. This means that they will easily surpass the record 40 policy advice statements that they submitted in 2011. There are four policy issues that the AILAC would like to highlight and that will be discussed in Toronto. The first is WHO IS. The AILAC has stated that it supports the recommendations of the WHO IS policy review team and has urged the board to take effective action on these recommendations. In a recent follow-up to a board resolution encouraging input from the ACs and SOs on the WHO IS final report, the AILAC reiterated that it would like to see the entire set of recommendations be implemented expeditiously. The second policy area is IDN VIP variant issues project. Members of the at-large are participating on the, in the IDN VIP. The views of at-large regarding IDN prioritization include to instruct the VIP team to prioritize work on IDN variant issues relevant to the received IDN GTLD applications and to consider the applications on a case-by-case basis. The at-large IDN working group will be developing a long-term IDN strategy during their meeting in Toronto. The third policy-related issue is compliance-related issues. Firstly, the members of the AILAC welcome the new position that compliance has been given within ICANN and are looking forward to the meeting with the compliance team in Toronto. The At-Large Registrant Rights and Responsibilities Working Group has been working on drafting new language on the RAA Section 3.7.8 on WHO IS accuracy and will be keeping a watching brief. Finally, the R3 white paper, which is entitled Making ICANN Relevant, Responsive, and Respected. The At-Large Future Challenges Working Group has been working on this white paper since late 2011. This paper identifies four challenges ICANN is facing and makes recommendations for how to overcome those challenges. The AILAC recently unanimously ratified this white paper. And the Future Challenges Working Group will be focusing on the next steps to take with its recommendations within this report. And more information on all of the AILAC statements are available at on the at-large correspondence webpage at the address listed on the slide. So next, we'll be looking at process issues. And I'd like to highlight two process and program-related activities. The first is the current efforts to revise the AILAC Rules of Procedure. Revisions of the AILAC Rules of Procedure were mandated by the AILAC At-Large Improvements Project, and over the last several months, four drafting teams have been working on separate sections of the AILAC Rules of Procedure to revise the 27 rules on participation and accreditation, organization of the AILAC, conduct of business, and its adoption and amendment of the Rules of Procedure. And the aim is to complete the revisions of the AILAC RLPs and have them ratified by the AILAC either in Toronto or shortly thereafter. And the second process-related area is the AILAC process for considering and making objections to new GTLD applications. And in ICANN's new GTLD program, AILAC was given the responsibility to consider and possibly file objections to new GTLD applications. A 15-member new GTLD review group, which was selected by the AILAC, and as well as five RALOs, has been meeting regularly to review comments received. To date, two comments have been received. The review group judged one to be outside areas of limited public interest objection and community grounds, and they will continue to review the second comment in Toronto. The activity is the at-large community's first operational role. Returning to other capacity building and outreach events, during the Toronto meeting, the North American Regional At-Large Organization, or NORALO, will be holding a series of meetings for their at-large structure representatives. And these sessions include a series of capacity building events, including joint sessions with ICANN fellows, the General Assembly, which will discuss inreach and outreach and how NORALO will fit into the post-new GTLD environment in ICANN, and NORALO outreach activities, including speaking with potential new members at large at the ICANN information booth. And one of the final events that will be within the Norello Toronto events activities, Norello will be hosting an event celebrating the five-year anniversary of the five regional at-large organizations, which play a crucial role in the organizational structure of the at-large community, as you can see on this diagram, because they provide a link between the globally diverse at-large structures and the 15-member ALAC. And to celebrate this, they will be holding an evening with at-large, honoring the RALOs, which will be held Monday night in Toronto between 1900 and 2030 in the Venue Hotel. Fadi Shahadi, the CEO of ICANN, will be giving the welcome address, and you're all very warmly invited to participate in this event. And this concludes ALAC update, and I now pass the floor over to my colleague, Barbara Rosner, to present the ASL policy highlights. Thank you.
Thank you, Heidi. The ASO, the Address Supporting Organization, is made up of the RIRs, the NRO, which is sort of an overarching entity, and they collectively make up the ASO through their membership elections. They primarily interact with ICANN through the presentation of global policies. These are policies that affect all of the RIRs, and there are very few policies that qualify for this. They have to be ones that involve their interactions with IANA and the receipt of member resources from IANA. The most recent global policy that was approved was for handling the recovered IPv4 address space post the exhaustion. And what that means is that IANA has now given out its last IPv4 allocation to the RARs, and so any addresses that come back into the system needed a mechanism to be redistributed, and that's what this policy addressed. To get involved with the ASO, you would actually need to participate in the bottom-up policy development of the RIR of your region. All the RIRs conduct open meetings where policy proposals are discussed and all have open mailing lists for their policy discussions. The next occurring meeting is going to be in the Aaron region in Dallas at the end of October. To get an overview of the ASO and their current work, in Toronto, there's going to be an ASOAC workshop on Monday at 5 p.m. local time, and then there's going to be a discussion of what are called the legacy IPv4 address assignments at a workshop on Wednesday at the same time, I believe. And in both of these discussions, you'll get a good chance to see sort of the kind of work that the ASO is involved in, and the types of issues that rise to the level of needing global policy to fulfill. They are not holding an ASOAC meeting at this ICANN meeting. They only do so once a year, and so they are likely to do that at our next meeting in Beijing. So with that, I'll pass it off to Felice to discuss the participation and engagement.
Thank you, Barbara. This is Phyllis. Hope you can hear me. I will just go through some highlights in regards to participation and engagement topics. In Toronto, the new meeting structure that was started with the last meeting will continue. You can find the full ICANN 45 schedule on this slide. David has already mentioned it at the beginning, but it's here too. The meeting will close by Thursday evening officially after the closing reception, and some specific Monday sessions are again scheduled to increase the interactive discussions on these specific topics. And you will notice that there are more and more requests now coming in for more specific sessions, which can only be accommodated in the schedule having parallel tracks. So that when you go to the schedule, you will notice that parallel scheduling effect on the agenda. The newcomers' activities are taking place in Toronto again. As you know, this program is to increase the efficiency in getting the new ICANN meeting participants on board and have them oriented as soon as possible. One pillar of the program is the newcomers lunch, and it will serve from Saturday to Wednesday following the opening hours of the registration desk. And it will be staffed by an ICANN staff and a community member. We will also have fellowship alumni supporting this effort. This is a very good example of ICANN staff plus community working together for the new members of the community. And it is now turning into an ICANN information hub for everyone, getting quite popular. So we try to have all sorts of fact sheets produced internally as well as those from the community groups. So even if you are not a newcomer, you may find it interesting to drop by the lounge and have a little chat, and you may also meet the newcomers there. The other pillar of the newcomers program is the newcomers Sunday tracks. They are getting really popular as well, and we don't get only the first-timers anymore, but the old-timers who attend to get a refresher. These are a series of presentations, and in Toronto, they will start at 10:30 a.m. with a welcome session, including an introduction to ICANN, the ICANN community, and the multi-stakeholder model. Then we will continue with the sessions on policy development at ICANN, role of the ombudsman, what's going to happen during the week ahead, ICANN engagement tools, a bit of brief introduction to registries and registrars, and the recent developments that's happening in the DNS and contractual compliance. If you know new participants to ICANN who will be coming to Toronto, you may want to advise them to attend these sessions and also drop by the newcomers lunch, as I mentioned. These sessions will also receive remote participation services. So those colleagues of yours who may be not in person in Toronto can also still follow these sessions. The as you know, ICANN Board's Public Participation Committee meet with the community through regular consultation sessions at ICANN meetings. And in Toronto, this session is scheduled for Thursday morning at 9:15 a.m. The topic this time will be the future ICANN meetings and the consolidated meeting strategy, which is currently out as a public comment period. The purpose of the ICANN consolidated meeting strategy is to ensure that the conference venues that offer the best facilities can be used while ICANN's commitment for having meetings globally is also still met. So you may find it quite interesting. Please drop by this session. Then, as usual, we will have a public forum in Toronto too on Thursday, starting at 1400. Following the new meeting schedule the structure, there will be a board report section at the beginning, which will then be followed by an agenda with specific topics. During the open mic, there will be time for both for the feedback on the board reporting as well as the usual specific agenda topics. These specific topics are again crafted with input from the community leaders. We want to make sure that the agenda of the public forum contains subjects that the community wants to talk about at the time. I'm currently working on such a detailed agenda, and we will publish it in a couple of days again quite in advance for the community review before the session takes place on 18th of October. Like I said, if you cannot be in Toronto in person, you can still follow the meetings through remote participation. We will be again broadcasting all public sessions of the meeting, allowing full remote participation to the sessions where applicable. This means if the chair of the session is taking questions and comments in the room from the participants or the audience, same will also apply to the remote participants. We do this by staffing the chat rooms so this designated staff can read the questions, your questions or comments out loud real time on behalf of you in the venue rooms. So, and there will be a post-meeting survey, so if you make use of these services, please let us know your feedback through that. And thank you. And I will now hand over to David, I believe.
Yes, thank you very much, Felice. Thank all of our presenters for the information given. Again, I will let you know of how to stay updated. We, of course, provide a monthly update, and this is available online. And also, we encourage you to subscribe to it on the website listed and the URL listed here in the slide. It also is available in several languages that will be helpful to you. With that, here is a listing of our policy staff that you can refer to and some of the areas of their responsibilities. Many of them were presenters today, and all of them contributed to the inputs for this policy update for you. With that, I would like to open it to questions if you have any. You can either raise your hand in the Adobe Connect or at this stage unmute the mic so that you can ask a question. We're ready for that. Thank you very much. Again, if you wish to have a question, please do so now. If not, you can contact us at policystaff-staff.org, and we'll be happy to answer your questions and provide additional information. Seeing no questions or hands up at this point, we provided you with a lot of information. We thank you for your attendance and participation. At this stage, I would like to wish everyone a good evening, good afternoon, wherever you may be, and see you all in Toronto, either in person or remotely. Thank you very much for being with us today.